Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, one and all, and welcome to Web Sleuths Radio. My name is Tricia Griffith, and my co-host, executive producer, and all-around gal Friday, Thursday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, Kimster, is with us, and we have so much to talk about tonight. We have George Zimmerman, Jerry Sandusky, Ronald Cummings, Levi Page is going to be our guest tonight, as well as author Judith Yates, and one of the top family psychologists in the state of Utah, Dr. Valerie Hale. And rather than prattling on like I normally do with my random thoughts that could be used against me in a mental competency hearing at any time, let's just go right to it, shall we? Jerry Sandusky, just saying the name makes me creep out. The Penn State assistant coach convicted on 45 of the 48 child sex abuse charges. What a scumbag. And I know name calling is not going to help anything, but it feels good sometimes, and this is one of those times. Sandusky was a predator of the worst kind, a man who sought out vulnerable boys whose mothers needed a father figure for their sons, like I said, a true scumbag. Welcome to Web Sleuths Radio, psychologist Dr. Valerie Hale. Dr. Hale, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you coming on Web Sleuths Radio tonight.
You bet, Trish.
Now, Sandusky is a classic example of a predator pedophile, and I think it's extremely important that we all understand how a man like Sandusky came to be. What caused this deviant behavior to take over his life? What caused him to make choices that were monstrous and horrible? Now, Dr. Hale, I know you haven't treated this man. I know you don't know anything about him other than what we know. But let's just talk in general terms here. Let's start out with a specific question about Sandusky. Do you think we should assume that Sandusky himself was abused as a child?
No, I don't think that. I think it's a common thing that people say, well, he was abused, and therefore he will abuse. But I think that it doesn't necessarily mean he wasn't, but it's a real disservice to the millions of people who have been abused sexually, physically, or emotionally to make the assumption that that is the cause of future abuse, because the abuse victims that I've known throughout my career, none of them would behave in such a cold and predatory fashion. So I think that's a real kind of thing.
Well, what do you think, so then how in the world did this seemingly normal guy who's really a monster, what in the world happened? How did he get this way?
My sense about this is that we think about sexual abuse, and it's a horrible crime. But it's a crime that's based in a complete lack of empathy for another human being. And if you pull your camera back a little bit, you can see that most crimes are based at some level in the incapacity to empathize and appreciate the effects of my behavior on somebody else and what their experiences would be. Whether I hold them up at gunpoint because I want money, because I whenever I bilk old ladies out of millions of dollars because they're a member of my church and I can, all these things go back to a failure in the capacity of people to empathize. And I think that's a much more interesting question than when this failure of empathy manifests itself in a sexual predatory way, because then you get off talking about things like, you know, what did his mother do and was it sexual? Better is to think about it in terms of everybody has sexual urges of all kinds. And the thing that makes you not a sexual predator is not necessarily because you don't have all kinds of unusual sexual thoughts or feelings. It's what you do with them. And people who aren't predators may notice all kinds of feelings in themselves and say, yeah, that's not okay. That would be exploiting somebody else. That would be hurting somebody else. But people who have character disorder at their core don't care about the effects of their behavior on other people. They want to satisfy their needs, whatever those are, at any cost. And, of course, in terms of, I'm assuming Mr. Sandusky, my sense is that he was quite clever in being able to achieve what he wanted. Why he wanted it is a different sort of question, but the fact that he wanted it and then he let nothing stop to get in his way, that to me is the more interesting question.
Well, and another interesting part, and I agree with you on that, another interesting part is what the defense tried to say in Sandusky's trial. You're chuckling now because you know what I'm going to say. Histrionic personality disorder. What in the hell does that have to do with pedophilia, and why would that even be a defense?
Well, I think it's interesting. I'll do a little mini lecture if that's okay.
Yes,
so
please.
So the personality disorders are, and I'm going to speak really loosely, and I'm not in my professor chair, but
Okay.
Actually sitting on my couch, but my own couch. But personality disorders have to do with problems in relationships with other people across the board. So, and there's all kinds of different personality disorders. For example, we all might say that Ted Bundy was an antisocial personality disorder, which doesn't mean shy. It means against society. So he robbed and stole and threatened people and was aggressive even as quite a young person, was a con man, etc. Another kind of personality disorder is narcissistic personality disorder. People like this are brittle. They expect, they are greatly entitled. They like to associate themselves with high status people. Of course, inside they're quite fragile and have had no connected emotional relationships as young children. Histrionic personality disorder falls in that category. They call it cluster B, borderline, histrionic, narcissistic, and antisocial. And those all have to do with this sort of manipulative, conning, interpersonally exploitive sorts of behavior in one way or another. So histrionic people, when you interview them, are really quite warm and very, very charming.
Mm-hmm.
They have an intense need to be the center of attention. They oftentimes, histrionic is more diagnosed in women than in men. And again, we could spend days talking about why that might be.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about someone like, and, you know, God rest her soul, Anna Nicole Smith, for example.
Yes.
I've never diagnosed her. I don't know her. I couldn't diagnose her. But the behaviors that you read and know about her would suggest that she might have some of those qualities in the sense that she was very interested in her external self. She needed to be the center of attention. She was extremely needy. She was seductive. And all those things kind of go with it. So they're saying, I thought it was an interesting diagnosis, histrionic personality disorder, such that he was desperate to be the center of attention, desperate to be needed, desperate to be loved. And I call those people, am I allowed to say what I really think? Or are you going to
have
a 7-second delay?
No, there is no delay here.
They're really quite pains in the ass to have as friends.
Yes, they are.
Because they are constantly, their needs are more important than yours. They're dramatic in their presentation. And interestingly, their dramatic presentation is often really vague. I loved my mother, but they can't really tell you what they loved about their mother, and they really didn't spend much time with their mother after she she dies. So with him, I thought it was an interesting choice of a diagnosis. But you know what? And it doesn't mean that people with personality disorders aren't human beings, and that you can sort of regress into a personality disorder looking kind of behavior when you're stressed out. It's a matter of degrees,
mm-hmm.
And so I think that just because somebody has a histrionic approach or histrionic personality disorder approach to things, that has, in my opinion, that has nothing to do, well,
exactly.
I would say 99% of it, to choose to act out sexually on young boys. It has everything to do with having no empathy for young boys.
Mm-hmm.
It has everything to do with that. But it has nothing to do with deciding to be sexually predatory.
And that was the interesting thing, Dr. Hale. It was like I've never, ever, not that I'm an expert, but I do pretend to play one at all times.
On TV, right.
On TV and radio. And I've never heard of a histrionic personality disorder being linked up to pedophilia. I was just like,
nope.
What? It just made no sense.
Well, I was interested to know that the defense, I was reading on in the newspaper about the crime a little bit because I knew I'd be talking to you probably about it. And what I thought was really interesting was that they were already saying they didn't have enough time to prepare. They had to read all these things, et cetera, et cetera. They only needed 7 months to do it, and they didn't have enough time, and I think they're going to mount an appeal. And I thought, was that a long ball or what to throw?
Mm-hmm.
That sort of a desperate kind of a grab versus the fact that this is a guy who's warm and charming and uses those qualities of his personality not to help other people or make them feel happy and comfortable and safe, but to help them feel happy, comfortable, and safe enough to then make them feel manipulated and terrified.
Exactly. We have a couple of questions from our chat room, Dr. Hale, and then I know you have to go. We have Levi Page, also author Judith Yates, waiting in the wings, in the green room, enjoying the refreshments that we have available.
Liar.
I know, totally lie. A couple of things. Dottie, the wife. Everybody, I've never heard one person say, well, the poor thing was, the wool was pulled over her eyes. Don't you think? Just on a human being level, she had to know, don't you think?
Well, it's interesting. Again, never get a shrink on the phone because they won't shut up. But I shouldn't say that, right? That's not very fair to my fellow psychologists. I apologize. But I will say this. I think about this woman who's married to this man and has a lifestyle. And remember, she's a woman, a product to some degree of her generation. Doesn't excuse her behavior in the least if indeed she knew about these things. But I'm wondering what kind of psychological splitting off it would take or dissociative process it would take to convince yourself that something untoward wasn't happening with those children. Mm-hmm. Given that I didn't follow the trial closely because I don't like to do those kind of things. I have enough of it at my job. So
you
it's
see
not
it
my
every
hobby.
Day.
Right. And so, but my sense is that there apparently there was children that said they were in the home and
screaming.
Yelling and screaming, and she was home. So what kind of fascinating psychological splitting off where you dissociate yourself? Maybe in some ways she was traumatized and she split it off and she just can't let herself know about it. I think that's what I find really interesting about
it. It is interesting, and it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. We're talking with Dr. Valerie Hale, a psychologist in Utah, about the Sandusky trial and convictions. And we have another question from the chat room. And can a psychopath, or whatever he is that a birth defect? Does that happen at birth? Can we now say it's a birth defect and maybe we can fix it through brain surgery at some point?
You know, that's a great, great question. And I wish, I am not the expert on psychopaths at all. I have an esteemed colleague named Dr. Heather Walker. She is. But mm-hmm. what I've learned from her and what I've learned from the literature and what I know in general as a general psychologist in this area is that there's some literature that talks about the behavior of people who have a psychopathic bent in terms of their brain and if they can learn from punishment. And this is an old study in which they took people who were in prison, some because they were impulsive and dumb, and some because they were psychopathic and got caught, right? And they had, mm-hmm. and then people who weren't in prison, and they had them do a maze, like learn a task, and if mm-hmm. they did something wrong, they got an electric shock. Not a bad one, but it was enough to make you jump, right?
Okay.
And the people who weren't psychopaths learned fast from the electric shock. They learned immediately, wow, punishment is painful, and I'm not gonna. I'm anxious. I'm gonna. It makes me nervous. I have an uncomfortable state anticipating punishment. I'm going to learn and not make a wrong turn on this maze to get punished. Psychopaths don't get anxious. That's how we know. They don't get mm-hmm. anxious typically. They're not anxious, and so punishment doesn't really seem to deter them. But when you gave them prizes for making correct turns in the maze in the form of money, psychopaths learned really fast how to do the maze. See what I'm saying?
Interesting.
Yeah, so there's something that would suggest that basic wiring may have something to do with it. And then that begs a larger and more complicated question, is if the person's born this way, then is it really a crime? And
exactly.
And more than we can talk about, except to say that, you know, you're living in society, and if you have some disability that makes you prey upon others, we have, as a society, we have to protect other people.
First
and
foremost.
And endeavor to try to, yeah, first and foremost, protect other people, and then endeavor to try to help people who have this
exactly.
kind of wiring. My own belief is that you have a wiring plus you have an environment.
Mm-hmm.
An early nurturing or non-nurturing environment, to me, speaks a lot to people who have a capacity to attach.
Exactly.
And if they don't have a capacity to attach, then there you go.
There you go. And like you said, it, first and foremost, society needs to be protected. And that's what we can argue, you know, forever, whether is it truly a crime if they're born this way or not. Okay, that's great. But let's get them in a facility away from society so they don't harm us. And then let's figure that out. You know, let's figure all of that out. And that's, again, we could go on and on all night, Dr. Hale. I mean,
we have in the past, I believe.
We have gone on all night long talking about stuff. So, but Dr. Hale, whether you know it or not, you are now officially the Web Sleuth Radio Psychologist. I have given you that job and that title. Wear it proudly.
I hope that's okay.
And I will
well,
be
I
calling
will.
You again soon. Dr.
A
Valerie
pleasure.
Hale, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Have a great show.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Dr. Valerie Hale, a dear friend of mine, and now the Web Sleuth Psychologist, Web Sleuth Radio Psychologist, and she doesn't know what she's gotten herself into. I'll be calling her a lot. Let's go to our guest now as we continue our discussion. We have Levi Page on the phone. Let me get Levi here. Da, da, da. Levi, are you there, sir?
Hey, Tricia, how are you?
I am great. And we have also with us Judith Yates, and Judith has written an amazing book. And we'll be talking about her book. It's called How to Recognize the Devil, Common Sense, Self-Defense, Safety, and Security. And Judith, welcome to Web Sleuth Radio.
Thank you. I am champing at the bit to make some comments here.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. Levi, may we let Judith go first, since you and I always yammer on and on and on? Is that we'll let Judith go first. Judith, comment.
I'm
We'd love to hear it.
I was listening to some of her comments, and she's on the nose. And I don't know this case, because she's absolutely right. When you do this for a living, you really don't, and it's kind of bad, but you don't pay that much attention to the news. But this crime that this man committed is going on as we speak, in classrooms, in the gym, in the hallways, in homes, all over the United States, all over the world right now. And I don't want to say it's not a big deal, because it certainly is, and I'm glad it's bringing light to it, but it's one in thousands.
Right.
And that's what's heart-wrenching. And every crime is about two things, be it burglary, robbery, rape, and child molestation, power and control.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's wrong with this individual.
Yes, absolutely.
And we have a problem in this society with several things. One, it won't happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
This won't happen to me. And again, that goes from burglary to child molestation.
Right.
And this is one reason why I wrote this book. And we're also we tend to be a homophobic society. And
mm-hmm.
especially in sports. And that goes from little league up to professional sports.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the tools that these individuals use is don't tell, or people will think you're homosexual. And I'm betting that was used a lot here.
I'm sure it was. And that what a horrible, I mean, everything about it is horrible. And that just adds to it. Judith Yates, tell us a little bit about yourself, because I'm sure our listeners are going, wow, this lady sounds great. I would like to know more about her. So tell us about your background.
And they're not slamming down the phone or
no, not at all.
Turn on the Brady Bunch. I'm a criminologist. I've been studying crime, writing about crime, lecturing about crime all my life. I'm currently a professor. And the book was written after 20 years of law enforcement experience, coupled with my education. I'm currently working on my PhD.
Mm-hmm.
What I learned from criminals, how they work and behave. I've worked for the Sheriff's Department. I've worked for the prison system. I've been a private investigator. I've worked in loss prevention. So it's a little bit of everything. And what I've learned, I'm sharing with other people in this book, everything from travel safety to home and property security to protecting your child. But I do it without teaching you to be afraid of society, because one thing people do not want to do when they're learning crime prevention, self-defense, is they're afraid. And they're thinking, okay, well, you know, I don't want to talk about that. It's scary. And I've actually had, when I presented to a group of parents, before I went on stage, the lady said, don't talk about child molesting, don't talk about rape, don't talk about domestic violence. Those things are scary.
Oh, no.
Well, we don't send soldiers into war and stop them at the front and go, don't shoot your guns, they're loud.
Right, right.
So, you know, we've got to know the enemy. And I wrote this book. I told some funny stories. I told some sad stories. I used actual true crimes that I've worked myself or that I've known the cases, and I've talked about them. And I even have a chapter on, you know, crazy criminals, crazy
mm-hmm.
cases that no one would believe that have actually happened to me or someone that I've known. And
mm-hmm.
I even have a chapter on Nashville's most notorious case. It's a missing person case. It's gone on for 9 years, where a little 13-year-old girl's been missing all that time. Her name's Tabitha Tudors.
Right.
And I have a chapter on that. So.
Well, Judith, we'll come back to you, because we have so much to talk about with you. And I just think it's
awesome.
Fascinating that
okay.
people are telling you, don't say this because it's too scary, when that's exactly what we should be talking about. But now let's go to a gentleman who has trouble expressing himself. He's so shy, Levi Page. Levi, tell us your thoughts on Jerry Sandusky. And remember, you can say whatever you want. We won't be fined by the FCC.
Well, I agreed with the verdict. Obviously, I think that the evidence against him was overwhelming. And, you know, I do think that Dottie Sandusky, you know, I don't know how she sleeps at night because, you know, obviously cameras were not in the courtroom, so the only thing that we had to go by was the media reports. But, you know, according to some of the victims who testified, one of the victims was downstairs in the basement screaming for help at the top of his lungs, and Dottie Sandusky was upstairs while he was, you know, being molested and while he was screaming, and she didn't do anything. And, you know, how a woman could sit there and do that is, you know, is just astonishing.
It is.
She would, you know, cover up for her husband. And her, you know, people said, some of the reporters that were inside the courtroom had said that she was stone-faced the entire trial. She didn't show hardly any sort of emotion. So maybe, you know, Jerry Sandusky, you know, picked a spouse that, you know, would just sweep everything he did under the rug. Maybe he had sort of the same problems that he had, that, you know, didn't care about, you know, whether children were being molested. She, you know, has no heart. You know, I don't know, but I think that, you know, his wife, you know, I don't understand how she goes to sleep at night.
I don't either. And, you know, that I'm always angry at the criminal because that's the person you need to be angry at. But I can get just as angry as the people who stand by and let it happen.
Yeah, she could have prevented it.
She should know better.
She could have. Yes, and, you know, there's a lot of people that you can be angry at here. You can be angry at, you know, Penn State and all the officials there, the coaches who swept this under the rug. Mike McQueary had said that he heard sexual noises coming from the shower that he had seen.
Oh,
a young
don't even
boy
get me going
against,
on that guy.
Up against the wall, and had seen Jerry Sandusky behind him, and that he had heard slapping noises. He did actually report that to his higher-ups. You know, he didn't do anything illegal. He reported it to his father, and he also reported it to higher-ups there, including Joe Paterno, who's now passed away. And they are the ones that decided that they're not going to go to law enforcement. And many people have, you know, sort of compared this to the Catholic Church, who are handling it internally instead of going to law enforcement and having law enforcement do a thorough investigation, interviewing the victims, interviewing the suspect, and then deciding whether or not to press charges. And also, this did go to law enforcement, I believe, in
1998.
Yeah, you're correct. And they did not believe one of the victims.
Can you imagine? My heart just goes out to that young man and his mother. The
and that
anger
victim was
they
in the courtroom. That victim
yeah,
was
were.
In the courtroom during the verdict.
And
he
sobbed. He just sobbed, and I don't blame him. I sobbed right along with him. Okay, let's change subject here. And speaking, we're on the scumbag theme today. Ronald Cummings. Now, I am busy Saturday running around, and I get a text from Kimster. Ronald Cummings is out of jail. Ronald Cummings, the father of Haley Cummings, still missing. We don't know what happened to her. It's just been a huge cluster. And, Judith, I'll get your take on this as well in a moment. But what is the status now of Ronald Cummings, Levi? Is he out of prison? What's going on?
Well, everybody, if you don't know who Ronald Cummings is, he is 28 years old. He's the father of Haley Cummings, who vanished in February of 2009 from a small town in northwest Florida, Satsuma, Florida. She vanished from her trailer under the care of Ronald's 17-year-old girlfriend, Misty Crossland. And Ronald Cummings and Misty Crossland, who have been at the center of all of this, were busted in 2010 for dealing drugs, hydrocodone, OxyContin, and they are currently serving 15-plus years in prison. Ronald Cummings was sentenced to 15. He got some of his charges dropped because he gave a proffer with the state attorney. He was going to turn on some of the other defendants. And Misty Crossland was sentenced to 25. Now, I had heard last week, you know, I think it was Friday, I had gotten all sorts of things in my inbox, people that had registered for updates on Ronald Cummings on VineLink, which is a prison website that updates people on the status of inmates, had said that he was being moved, and nobody knew why. And then Saturday morning, you know, I get a telephone call And it's informing me that he was actually free. He was actually released. Somebody had even contacted the jail that he was transferred to, Santa Rosa County, Florida, and they had said that he was just set free. And I was like, wow, he pled guilty to all of these drug charges. Many people think that he has information or murdered his child, and this guy's, you know, walking free. Well, I found out that he's actually being transferred to Brevard County, which I think was 200 miles away from, you know, Satsuma, where
mm-hmm.
Haley went missing. And nobody knows exactly why he's being transferred. And he's not even showing up in the jail in Brevard County. He is still showing up as not in custody. So it's
well,
still
that's
a mystery
weird.
What's going on. Yes.
Oh, okay. Now, Levi, you pretty much, I turn to you for all things true crime. What? Give it your best shot. What the heck is going on?
Well, there's a lot of theories. One theory is that Ronald Cummings may have witnessed something behind bars, and one of the inmates is from Brevard County, was convicted in something there, and Ronald Cummings is being transferred to testify against them, that he's basically a jailhouse snitch, that he's continuing to do what he did when he was, you know, not in jail. Because, you know, I remember when Haley went missing, Tricia, we had heard all sorts of rumors that Ronald Cummings had been a police informant.
Oh, that was a big one, yeah.
Police.
And it would make
because
sense he because
had,
he was always picked
his,
up.
If you look
yeah.
at his criminal record, he has been picked up since he was 18 years old. He probably has a juvenile record that's sealed for drugs, manufacturing drugs, dealing drugs. I mean, you name it. This guy did it. And people are saying, you know, the charges were dropped because this guy was a police informant, that he was a snitch, and people are saying that he's just doing the same thing behind bars, and that the reason that he's not being showing up in custody somewhere is because they may have had him in protective custody, because we do know that he was a member of a white supremacist gang. He has a Nazi tattoo on him that he got. Lovely character, yes. And then some people think that this may have something to do with Haley Cummings because, you know, I've heard rumblings that the Putnam County Sheriff's Office has new information on the case. Now, I don't know if this has anything to do with Haley Cummings. I did contact one of my sources close to the investigation, and they were not even aware that Ronald had been transferred, that he was
mm-hmm.
being transferred, that he was in transit to somewhere else. Now, it could have something to do with Haley, and they just don't want me to know.
Mm-hmm.
But I did hear that they have new evidence in the case, and I don't know if there's a private investigator that had worked for Tommy Crossland, which is Misty Crossland, Haley's babysitter, Ronald Cummings' ex-wife, her brother. There was who was also in jail on this drug sting. So basically the police got all of the key players in this case behind bars on drugs and have been trying to sweat them for 2+ years for information on Haley. The former private investigator for Tommy Crossland, he also was a private investigator for Haley's mother, Crystal. His name is Stephen Brown, and I don't know if you have read his blog. You can go to handcuffedtotheocean.com. which is his blog, and he has located someone that had been in jail with Misty Crossland and then someone that had been in jail with one of Misty's friends named Nene.
Oh, Nene, yes. Mm-hmm.
And that is one of Misty's, you know, friends that she liked to party with, and there was all sorts of rumors that Misty had Amber Pravat over at the home the night Haley went missing, or that her and Amber Pravat had left Haley and Haley's young brother unattended in the trailer the night that Haley went missing and that they were partying. There was also a story that they were partying and Haley overdosed on their drugs and
mm-hmm.
they got rid of the body at a pond. They searched that pond and no body was ever recovered. But they said that this witness that he had located behind bars was in there with Misty and Amber, had basically said that she was at the house that night, and at the home the night that Haley went missing was Misty, Tommy, Amber and Joe Overstreet, if I recall correctly. And Joe Overstreet is Misty's cousin from Tennessee that was visiting at the time that Haley vanished, and he left right after Haley vanished. And Misty and all of her family have accused him of murdering Haley.
Over and over, right.
He's not been charged. But they said that he murdered Haley. He dumped her body in the St. John's River, which is a river in Putnam County, Florida. They searched the river, and nothing was found as far as Haley's body. Now, I have been told that there was evidence recovered in that search, but it was not enough to charge anybody with any crime. So that's what this new witness says.
So
if that's the new evidence that the police have, I don't know. I don't know if this means anything. We have somebody hanging around, you know, Misty and Ron and all of these people. They're obviously involved in the drug and criminal element. They're not, you know, they're not very credible. Can you take them at their word? If they're in jail, they're probably trying to get time shaved off their sentence. And I think that's the problem that investigators have in this case, Tricia, is that everybody is not credible. Everybody has ulterior motives from coming to law enforcement and saying this person did it, because they're trying to get time shaved off their sentence because they're all in trouble with the law.
Exactly, and they're turning on each other, I'm sure, just flip-flopping, saying whatever.
Yes.
They're probably just saying whatever the investigator wants to hear, and they're trying to figure out what's true and what's not, and it's just, as I have said from the beginning, a big cluster. Judith Yates. Are you chomping at the bit again to talk about this? Are you just? I mean, you've seen this type of. You have seen this type of criminal behavior. You're a professor. You've dealt in law enforcement and with criminals your whole life. You've written an amazing book, and we're going to get to more of that in just a moment. How to Recognize the Devil: Common Sense, Self Defense, Safety, and Security. You just heard Levi Page in a very eloquent way put together years of just crap that has happened in this case with this poor child, Haley Cummings. What are your thoughts on this case?
Okay. Well, first of all, here we go again. Children have not... children have had the short stick for years.
Mm-hmm.
Since, you know, the Mayflower bumped the rock. Children have gotten the short stick in legalities forever in this country.
Yes.
And because he's walked out of jail, because he's in prison, does not necessarily mean he's guilty of this crime. He's guilty of a lot of things, obviously, because he was charged with it. Remember, guilty is a legal term. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not taking up for this fellow. I don't know this family.
Mm-hmm.
I've known 100,000 families like them, but I don't know them. I have no idea. You know, only certain people know what's truly happened with this crime. Now, I can tell you, anybody that's using, dealing, transporting drugs, you can always tell when they're lying because their mouth is moving.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's exactly right.
They'll lie to each other. They'll lie to themselves. They'll lie to you. This
that's
is
exactly
also a high-profile
right.
case. Everybody's trying to be a movie star.
Mm-hmm. Boy, you hit that on the head. You absolutely did.
And you
did.
Know, Tricia, the thing with Ronald Cummings is when he was busted for the drugs, he had made a plea deal with investigators. He was the first one to do so. And, you know, everybody knows the first one that says, you know, I'm going to snitch is the one that got the deal. And he got the deal, even though he still got a very stiff prison sentence. That probably tells you what law enforcement probably wants him in jail for a reason. Because even though he did turn state's witness, he still was sentenced to 15 years for dealing drugs, which is a long time.
That's a very long time.
He gave a proffer. He gave a proffer with the state attorney. And we know that the proffer has to do with his daughter's disappearance. Many of his defenders would like to say that it was for the drugs, but the drugs are a closed case. What he said in his proffer would be made available to the public via Florida sunshine laws, and we would be able to read what he told investigators in that proffer if it was involving the drug cases, but it is sealed. It is sealed because it has to do with an ongoing investigation, which means his daughter's case, which means that this man had known information about his daughter that the case is classified as a homicide, even though they have not recovered a body. He had known information, and he did not tell law enforcement for over 2 years, and he only told law enforcement to get time shaved off his sentence.
When it suited him.
Which means that he had some involvement somewhere that is obviously would make him look bad. And that is very telling. And we know Art Harris has reported, he's an investigative journalist that has covered this case, and he reported that Ronald Cummings gave information on telephone calls that he received while he was at work. Ronald's alibi was always, I was at work.
Mm-hmm.
And many people had said, oh, he could not have committed this crime because he was at work. But that does not mean that he did not have knowledge of what happened.
Right.
And we know for a fact that he had received telephone calls from Misty and Tommy the night that Haley went missing. And he testified, he gave law enforcement information about those telephone calls.
That was obviously different than what he has said before.
And we know that it was about his daughter. And we know from the beginning of this case that Ronald Cummings would not cooperate with law enforcement. He hired a defense attorney very early on. That's well within his legal rights to do so. But many people were drawing negative inferences from it because this is a guy who would go on Nancy Grace and fake cry, Everybody saw that it was fake. He would say that he wanted his daughter back, that he was going to kill whoever did this to his daughter. But yet he couldn't sit down with law enforcement and cooperate in their investigation. The only thing he said, I didn't do it, I was at work. W-R-K, that's how this guy pronounced it.
Yeah.
So he did not cooperate with the police. He only cooperated to get time shaved off his sentence. And many people are wondering, you know, did he even narc more on what he knew about what happened to his child? And maybe they have him in protective custody somewhere. Because from what I'm hearing from my sources, this guy's not having fun behind bars. Was getting in altercations on a regular basis and had been beaten up multiple times.
Well, again, because the only way to describe him, he's a total scumbag. And let's talk just a moment, and this is more of an interest on my end personally because of the problems that you and I have both experienced with people on the Internet, Levi Page, who have been defending Ron and who want to destroy people who say that Ron's a scumbag. Does he still have people out there defending him? Are the Ronettes, as they're called? No, do not tell me. They cannot be out there defending this man.
Trisha, have you read your own form?
Well, I have. I try and stay away from it because it makes me crazy. And I keep thinking they're going to eventually see this guy is just a scumbag. But they're still out there, aren't they? They're still out there defending him and trashing you and trashing me just because
they give him money. They give him money. They send money to him. Some of them paid for his attorney. Some of his supporters did. So this, you know, guy could have a criminal defense attorney and evade police. They've done a lot of things for Ronald. They purchased trailers for him after the police had seized the trailer because it was considered a crime scene where this child went missing. They paid for him a trailer. People, you know, he went on when his child went missing. He couldn't cooperate with the police, Trisha, so he went to NBC and got paid to do NBC and went on amusement park rides while he was in New York City while his daughter was missing.
what a piece.
And
of
people make
work.
All sorts of excuses for him. They bend over backwards. I've never seen people, you know, he uses racist language in his telephone conversations with his family. He says the N-word, but it's okay for him to say it because he has black family members.
Yeah, so that makes it okay.
He's a statutory rapist.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, it's okay. It's fine. Everybody makes all sorts of excuses for this guy all over the Internet.
Yeah, I you're right. And fortunately, I do have to say on Web Sleuth, you know, people are allowed to express their opinions, but we don't allow troublemakers on there. And it was honestly one of the hardest cases we've ever had to deal with while it was going on because people were just rabid about this guy, you know. I just do not understand it. Okay, we're going to move on quickly to George Zimmerman. Levi Page, what do you think about this tape of George Zimmerman that the defense has released? Do you think it's going to help him, hurt him? Does it matter? What are your thoughts?
I think it could do both depending on how, you know, people are polarized You know, you either support him or you're against him. If you support him, you can look at this tape and you could say, look, this guy was worried about crime in his neighborhood. He thought Trayvon Martin was suspicious. Trayvon Martin was in Frank Taiepi's yard, according to George Zimmerman. He was not on the street. He was in Frank Taiepi's yard, and he was looking into the house. He was acting suspicious, and that bolsters Zimmerman's story that Trayvon was acting suspicious, and he had every right as a neighborhood watchman to walk up to him and say, hey, what's going on? But then if you look, if you're against George Zimmerman, there's some things in this new video that's been released that, you know, could hurt George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman claims that he told the 911 operator, the operator said, are you following him, Trayvon Martin? And Zimmerman said, yes, I am. And the police, during the reenactment, were really zoned in on that because that's crucial.
Yes.
Were you following him? If you were following him, that means that you may have possibly been the aggressor. And he tried to backtrack and say, no, I wasn't following him to, you know, question him further to stop him. I was trying to get an address on one of the houses to tell police so they could, you know, get here and find him quicker. So that's a discrepancy in what he told the dispatcher and then what he told the detectives in the reenactment. So I think it just depends on how you look at it.
Well, and that's it. It's, again, it is so polarizing. I've never seen a case that has polarized America like this one, and it's so sad because let's just let the truth, let's let the facts speak for themselves as much as we can. You know, obviously Trayvon isn't here to defend himself, but it still bothers me. He had the gun. That's what bothers me, and a 17-year-old is dead, and it just, it's like Vinnie Politan said a couple weeks ago, and I'll keep saying it again because I believe it, George Zimmerman just isn't that smart. And I think that's what has a lot to do with this case is he's just, you know, he's not the sharp knife in the drawer.
We've seen the markings on his body where he had been in some sort of altercation.
Yes.
We did see that.
Absolutely. And that, and you can't deny that. That's there. So it's, again, to me, it's, I can't come down on either side yet. I just can't. I'm just, I don't know. I am very anxious to see this trial, but I have a feeling it's going to be a long, hot summer with that trial. Drew Peterson coming up. It's going to be crazy. Oh. Levi Page, thank you so much. I always call you at the last minute, and you're always there for me. I really appreciate it, my dear. And
well, thanks for having me, Tricia.
You know we love you, and anything you need, you just let us know, okay?
All right. Talk to you guys later. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Bye-bye. And now let's go to Judith Yates, author of How to Recognize the Devil, Common Sense Self-Defense, Safety, and Security. And Judith Yates has been in law enforcement in various areas and has witnessed some incredible things in her career. She is now a professor and has taken what she knows, her vast knowledge, and put it into a book to help us. How to Recognize the Devil. Judith Yates, how do we recognize the devil? That's a loaded question.
Yes, it is. I love a loaded question. First of all, and I discussed that, you know, we're brought up that the devil looks a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, red, pointy tail, horns, evil. But the devil does not look like that. The devil can be sitting next to us at the traffic light. He can be the person we meet and start dating and say, gosh, you know, what a wonderful person. They can be the person who's preaching from the pulpit. They can be the basketball coach that we think is so wonderful because they're going to take us to state.
Mm-hmm.
And I explain in the book that there is no such thing as, you know, well, they look okay. They seem okay. And I like it now that they have these little paper magazines out that you buy for a dollar at the little store called Busted or Arrested.
Oh, I love
those. What have you.
That's just my if anybody wants to get me a present, buy me that every week. That's what I want.
Why do you like them?
You know, because it's just
like
because I look at them and I think, yeah, and I try and guess what their crime is by their picture, which is totally wrong and irrational and terrible. But I just,
and there you go. You're trying to recognize the devil.
Exactly. It's exactly what I'm trying to do. And, you know, I see the person with the wild hair and I think, oh, drugs. And it's, you know, something like speeding. And I'm totally wrong most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right. Because there is no look, really, to quote-unquote, the devil, to evil, as we see
right.
in our society, and that's what makes it so very, very scary. What do you think about, you know, when Oprah says, listen to your gut, listen to what you're feeling? Do human beings have that ability to sense evil immediately?
Well, Oprah didn't really coin that phrase. You know, we coined that phrase when we first learned to, whatever we believe. You know, you can learn that we rolled out of the ocean and came from little squishy pieces, and we said legs might come in helpful. So we grew legs and arms. Or, you know, Eve said, hey, Adam, try this. It's really good. And he trusted her. We've been blamed since, you know. But whatever happened in our evolution or, you know, whatever we want to believe, we've had that gut instinct since time began because we're all basically animals.
Mm-hmm.
Animals have the instinct. The deer in the woods doesn't go, boy, I better be careful because it's dark in here. The deer has an instinct. Something doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And they leave. They leave because that's where the cougar lives or that's where the bobcat lives. Okay, we have that instinct, but as we're growing, we're told, quit being silly. Especially
yes.
women. You're acting like a girl. Now, not man bashing. Please don't misunderstand me. But we're told, you're being silly, you're acting like a girl. Oh, he seems okay. Women are the worst at it, by the way. Oh, he's cute. He seems nice. He bought you roses, you see.
Right.
And, you know, children have very good instinct because they haven't, it hasn't been taken out of them yet. You know, mommy, he's scary. Well, why? I don't know. He's just scary. Moms have good instinct. True mothers, not, you know, Casey, Kaylee Anthony, whatever her name was.
Right, Casey Anthony,
true mothers, yeah, true mothers have good instinct. And I know there's moms out there that are listening that know this because they all of a sudden have a feeling, something's wrong with my kid, something's wrong with my kid. And then the phone rings and it's the school, your child fell off the merry-go-round.
Right.
You know. So, and cops have good instinct because we've relearned it. You know, it's been brought back up into us. Something's not right here. So we live on our instinct, you know. Sometimes we blame it on our dog. Well, if my dog doesn't like them, then I know they're no good. But it's really our internal self saying, something's not right here. And we've got to act on that because it's our survival tool.
It is. So what do we do? I mean, especially as women, you know, here's the thing, okay? We know not to walk in dark places late at night. I had to, early in my career, had to walk out to a dark parking lot. It was right by a homeless shelter. And, you know, I'd walk out swinging a bat. And I thought, if anybody comes near me, I'm going to scream. I'm PMSing and I forgot my meds. Come on, bring it on.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured they would think I was crazy enough and they'd leave me alone. Now, I would actually literally swing a bat as I walked along. And I never had a problem, but I felt I had to be that aggressive because I was so scared. And so what I'm saying is we know the general stuff, but what advice would you give us? How do we protect ourselves? It's scary out there.
Right. Well, okay, first of all, we have to quit, and again, I don't want to sound, but we have to quit saying it's scary out there because there are just as many angels as there are devils.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe where you are, but
Now, look, I didn't say wear a bikini and walk down Watts at 3 a.m., okay?
Right,
but,
okay.
There are just as many angels as there are devils, all right?
Mm-hmm.
It's using our instinct, and it's like you said. You know, if I'm going out to my car at a certain night, you know, swinging a bat, saying stuff, that's verbal self-defense. That's visual self-defense. Okay, you don't have to be out there carrying a submachine gun and yelling, you know, I'm on PMS and I got bullets, you know. But there's just certain ways. There's certain ways you carry yourself. There's certain things you do. And I can't really, you know, can cover it all here, but I talk about, you know, teaching your child, for example, certain things.
Like what?
Without scaring them. Code words before you get in the vehicle of a neighbor. Because you are more likely to be harmed. This is children, elderly, women, adults. You are more likely to be harmed by someone you know than a stranger. Teaching a child stranger danger is crap.
Okay.
Because who is a stranger to a child?
Well, exactly.
That
kids are friendly
to
everybody.
That coach is not a stranger.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, so what do we, so comes at you, you know.
But how do we say, you know, watch out for your neighbor without scaring the child? What do we do?
Well, it's kind of convoluted to go into, but first of all, you start with communication. Mm-hmm. You can tell me anything, and I won't get angry.
Mm-hmm.
And you keep steady your word. You tell me anything. And then you talk about, you know, parts that aren't to be touched, and you use real words. You don't say boo-boo, binky, you know, hoo-hoo.
Mm-hmm.
You use real words. And then you know your neighbors.
Right.
We had a neighbor where I'm from, you know, when his wife died, suddenly his freezer and his cupboards were filled with candies and treats and popsicles, and he was always inviting the neighborhood kids over.
Mm-hmm.
Little kids. And I told my niece, don't go over there.
Well, now, see, that would be
well,
the
why?
Thing. If there was, and I hate to say this because, let's face it, Judith, I mean, there might be a nice guy who's maybe in his 40s who likes little kids and isn't a crazy pedophile. But if he is friendly to children, we're going to automatically assume that he's a pedophile, right?
Okay. He can give my niece a popsicle and help her fly her kite in the front yard with all
mm-hmm.
of us out there.
Okay,
but
you
don't need to
saying.
Be going over to his house by herself.
Inside, right, exactly.
Sure.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Because I've thought about that with Jerry Sandusky and this situation. You know, what about the men out there who truly want to help young boys? They're all
sure.
going to be put under a microscope now. Obviously, you shouldn't be showering with young boys and things like that. And we've heard those horror stories of, you know, the one little boy who threw his underwear away because it was bloody all the time. And that's when his mom became suspicious. But again, I think, you know, it's sad that we have to lump everybody together and
mm-hmm.
worry about them being the devil. But I guess you said, you know, like you said, common sense things, just don't let them go in the house alone. There's no need
mm-hmm.
for, you know, an adult alone to have kids in the house all the time. You know, I understand that. But then, I don't
right.
know, it's just, it's a quandary. You want to keep your kids safe, but you don't want to scare them to death so they don't,
exactly.
you know, have,
and
you know,
don't
so,
have to.
Well, yeah. You don't have to, but it's a different world out there, and they, you know, they just have, it seems like they have to watch out for so much, and that's what's so sad, I guess.
But see, here we go. It's not a different world because harming children's gone on forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone on forever. Think about this. When we first started colonizing in America, it was perfectly legal for a 12-year-old child to marry a 50-year-old man because there were two laws. You had to get married and you had to work. Because
mm-hmm.
we had to keep reproducing in order to have, you know, the average size, quote-unquote, town was no larger than a football field.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to keep reproducing. So it was perfectly natural for an 11, 12-year-old child to marry a 50-year-old man. And that's one of the arguments that a child molester will use. Well, it used to be legal,
mm-hmm.
you know. Well, guess what? It's not anymore.
Well, we've evolved, thank goodness.
Yeah,
no, Judith.
I'm
oh, go ahead.
Go
I'm
ahead.
Sorry. No, you go ahead. I want you to finish your thought, please.
Okay. And this is something we have to, you know, we have to fight. Like I'm sure you've heard of NAMBLA. You
mm-hmm.
know, that's one of their
North American Boy Love Association. What a
yes.
bunch of creeps.
Oh my God. Yes. Please.
Ugh.
You know, implode them. But
yes.
nonetheless, there are ways to teach a child safety habits. You know, you don't have to be telling them. Don't give a car to the stranger. And anytime someone tells you, you tell them the Halloween candy scare. You know,
mm-hmm,
that's
right.
that's a myth. Tell them, you know, don't go in a stranger's house. Well, what if the kids want to come over and play? You simply tell them. If someone tells you, you know, this is a secret. This is a secret. Don't tell your parents. There are good secrets and there are bad secrets.
Mm-hmm.
What's a good secret? Well, let's talk about your birthday.
Right.
What's in the package? Those pretty packages. Ooh, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas time. What's in the package from Santa? Ooh, you know. Okay, how does that make you feel inside? Happy. Let them tell you, because they will. Kids
mm-hmm.
aren't stupid. Happy, excited. Okay, then what do you think a bad secret would be? And you'll see it on their face. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
What's a bad secret? Tell me a bad secret. Well, like at school, one time, a kid, and off they'll go.
Okay, what else would be a bad secret? Okay, any time there's a bad secret, especially if an adult tells you, you need to share with me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I won't get mad, I promise. And especially if an adult threatens, because, see, a molester's secret is, again, we go back to power and control. A molester will use secrecy as a weapon. That is their weapon.
Yes,
don't
it is.
Tell. Don't tell because they'll say you're a fag.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell because I'll kill your parents. Don't tell or I can't be your friend. Don't
mm-hmm.
tell or, and it keeps going.
Right.
So you have to see, we're such a reactive society. In my opinion, everybody in control in that school should be held accountable.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. We do need to keep an eye out for each other and for our children. And one thing I'd like to comment, you brought this up earlier, and I think it's an excellent point. More than likely, Jerry Sandusky said, people will think you're gay if you tell them. I am hoping that we are evolving as a society where that is no longer a threat. That's no longer a bad thing. Well, I think we're closer than we have been in the past. I think it'll
mm-hmm.
take a long time, but that's one thing I just hope and pray that is no longer seen as a threat, because that's a terrible thing, because it's on two fronts. You know, first of all, you're terrifying a child, and second of all, you're teaching them that being gay is horrible, and it's just, you know, it's not, but that's a whole other show. But anyway, I want to get to your book, Judith. Your book is called How to Recognize the Devil, Common Sense, Self-Defense, Safety, and Security. If you had to tell me the most important point of this book, what would that be?
That's like saying, who's your favorite child?
I know.
Sometimes
terrible.
The cat, sometimes the dog, sometimes the horse.
Yes.
Let's see. It's hard for me to say because sometimes I think it's the elderly abuse prevention section, because my grandmother had to be put in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And so I discussed that. Sometimes I think it's the Crimes Against Children department, because that's our future.
Right.
And we've got to start recognizing our kids.
Yes.
Sometimes I think it's workplace violence, because that was one of the hardest cases I ever had to work.
Well, you know what we should do, Judith? Is we should let people decide, and they should pick up your book. I would highly recommend it. But before we give that address, I want to follow up. Why was that the hardest one for you to do, the workplace violence?
Three people shot point blank range in the back of the head, execution style. One girl was due in about a month. When they buried her, they buried the baby in her arms.
Ugh. Now I see why.
The perpetrators got away with maybe $500, and I don't know why, but it affected all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I had nightmares for almost a year.
Mm.
And for some reason, and I've seen bloodier things. I've seen more horrifying things. I've seen, you know, I've had to go home and take hot showers that lasted, you know, a long time from things. But for some reason, all of us were just, I don't know even how to explain it.
It's just such a horrible, senseless. I mean, they're all senseless, but I know what you're saying.
They were taking inventory.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys decided they needed the money to pay off a drug lord. And I don't know. But then there's a case about a guy who got caught putting ribbons around a cow's neck. And I'm going to let people find out why, because I'm not sure I can discuss it on the air.
That kind of makes me go, ugh. Okay, Judith Yates, how do we get this incredible book? I would recommend it to everybody. Where do we find it?
My website is judithayates, all one word, .com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or you can email me, and my email address is judith.yates@wildblue, same word, it's wild like a creature,
mm-hmm.
and blue like the color. .net.
Okay, judith.yates@wildblue.net or judithyates.com, right?
No, it's Judith A. Yates.
judithayates.com. Mm-hmm. And if anybody needs the link, we'll have the link up for a little bit on website on Web Sleuths as well. But Judith,
okay.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I am so glad that you reached out. This has been fascinating, and I'm sure we'll have you on again very soon.
Well, listen, you guys call me anytime you need to, and I've got another book I'm working on now, which is about a true crime of on topic of a little boy that was killed by a perpetrator that he knew very well and trusted.
Oh, what, do you have a title yet, or can you want to reveal the case, or?
It was a relative. It was in a very tiny town where they said nothing like that will happen here.
Mm, right.
And it's in a very homophobic town where even law enforcement can't say the word gay. Very interesting.
Oh, that's
and, it's interesting because he was 14 years old. No, I'm sorry, 12 years old. The perpetrator was in his 30s, and it was quite horrific. And it was the most horrific thing that had happened in that county since that county was established. And it literally affected everybody there. So, but I'll let you know when we're getting close to press time.
Please do. That would be absolutely wonderful. Thank you, Judith Yates, so much for joining us on Web Sleuths Radio. We certainly appreciate you taking a time out of your busy schedule to join us, and we'll be talking to you soon, okay?
Thank you very much. I love your website. It's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye. Kimster, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Wow. This was a very information-packed show, if you will. And we still have a little bit more people, so hang tight, because it is time now for the Web Sleuth Hot Cold Case. And Kimster, take it away, my dear.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, we need a sound effect of,
I was just thinking
of a UFO coming down whenever I do this segment. How's that sound? That would be a lot of fun. Yeah,
I'll figure it out.
Those of you who aren't on websleuths.com, I am known as the friendly neighborhood alien there, so that's why I said that. This week we're going to talk about Cleashindra Hall. Excuse me if I pronounce that wrong. I've never heard it before. I'm going based on how it's spelled. Cleashindra Hall was last seen at her workplace in the vicinity of 3300 block of Fawcett Road in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, on May 9, 1994. She told her family that she would call them to get a ride home when her shift ended, but her family never heard from her. Later that evening, her mother phoned her employer and was told that Clea left work at approximately 8:30 p.m. when her ride arrived. The employer has told police that he saw Clea look out the window around 8:30 and then leave. He assumed her parents picked her up. This is the only information we've had at Web Sleuths for years, and during all this time, her mother hasn't given up. Clea's mom now believes that not everything that could have been done was done and has even gone to the city council recently for an explanation. We have a new member named Southern Summer who is helping Clea's mom, and she asked that Clea be our featured cold case this week. Southern Summer has posted updated information on websleuths.com in the last week, as well as create a Facebook page and website. She is asking that we get the word out so Clea's case will be solved and Clea can be returned to her loved ones. So please join our members who are actively sleuthing this case and give us some thoughts on the new leads. Go to www.websleuths.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of Clea and a link where you can go and click directly to her thread. If you aren't a member of Web Sleuths, join for free today. Still free, right, Tricia?
Absolutely. Always will be. That's the one thing I can guarantee you.
Great. Then please join today and help give Clea and her loved ones the justice they deserve.
Absolutely, Kimster. Thank you, and thank you for every week coming up with our Web Sleuths Hot Cold Case. There's so many out there. It's just we could do show upon show upon show about all these cold cases. It's just tragic. These poor families desperately need our help. And another thing that we're going to do, Web Sleuths, you know, we like to sleuth cases, obviously, but we also like to become involved where we can help. That doesn't mean doing some lame protest outside somebody's house or anything. We don't do any of that type of thing. What we're going to do next week, I'm going to have a guest on. I'm not going to tell you who it is yet, but we're going to announce something new that we'll be doing at Web Sleuths. And that's where we're going to try and find out when the violent predatory pedophiles are coming up for parole. Unfortunately, these predators are not kept behind bars for life. They have parole. They're released back into our society to prey again. Now, I am not talking about you know, the 19-year-old guy who had sex with a 17-year-old and he's convicted of a sex crime. No, I'm talking about the Jerry Sanduskys of the world, the predators. Okay, we are going to start a new thing on Web Sleuths where we are going to find out when these people are coming up for parole. We're going to notify the media in the area, and we're going to write letters. And we'll be talking more about that next week as we unveil it with our first case. We already have a case that we'll be working on to try and keep this predator behind bars so we can't harm any other children, and we can't do it without you. So be watching for that next week. Kimster, thank you again, my dear. You have been absolutely wonderful. I appreciate all you do, and you have a wonderful week. Okay.
Now, remember, I will not be here next week, so that you could do the unveiling of the new information in place of my cold case.
Oh, that is probably what I'll do, and I think the show will probably go straight to hell because you won't be here, but we'll try and recover. So I'll do my best with the technical issues. Thank you, Kimster. Thank you so much. And thanks to everybody.
I'll fix everything after I get back.
I'm sorry, what?
That I'll fix everything after I get back.
Yes, you will. You can fix it all, and there'll be plenty to fix, believe me. And thanks to everybody in our chat room and everybody listening. We do appreciate it. It's Web Sleuths Radio every Sunday night. We come on here at 8 o'clock Eastern where we discuss true crime, current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.